It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio now, Abraham Levitan. Good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Hello, Justin.
Abraham, of course, the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that really takes it's an interview podcast that focuses on the music industry. You can find it on iTunes. It's put out, I would say, what, once every couple weeks?
Except during summer when I haven't done anything. But here I am.
You should do reruns.
Yes. Yes. You know, please enjoy all the reruns of Nerds on Tour this summer. All the classic episodes.
All the classic episodes.
Catch up.
Also, he does the piano lessons, the power. Piano Power?
Piano Power.
I love this.
You got it.
Yeah.
We are signing up new students now. We are fully staffed, I would like to say.
Is the idea that you could teach piano by teaching the kids the songs they want to play.
Correct. Yes.
Teaching. I just went through, my son just did piano lessons, and it was stuff he did not want to play.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah.
I have cases that I have to solve every day where I am taking in the poor, poor people that have had to play things they don't want to play and turning this around. It's kind of like a self-help boot camp or something when I'm on the phone with people.
Abraham is with us once a month to talk about issues in music, mostly the music industry. And the one that we've been sort of talking about the most today has been this concept that at Cook County, has an administrator who wants to roll back or take some parts of the art community out of the exempt tax. Mm. Essentially, right now, if you are a club, a theater, other places, you can get tax-exempt status or performance tax-exempt status for it because you don't make a lot of money. There's someone arguing that's being abused, that there's rock clubs, DJs, rap clubs. Those are not considered, quote-unquote, fine art, and they need to get on the back tax trail.
Yes, right.
Which is years and years of back tax, and that could actually take a lot of these clubs out of commission and get them out of business.
Yeah, the county is going after these clubs that operate on razor-thin margins, as we all do in the music industry, and now saying we are trying to collect 6 years of back taxes because you have been putting on art that is not fine.
Now, what I think is really interesting about it is that the lawyers that are representing the other side have been very smart to make this a bigger issue about what is and what is not fine art. Essentially, what's happening in a committee hearing, conference room and in the county building is essentially defining what we consider fine art for the remainder of human time.
Yes, and I think this case is only going to get more ridiculous. I have a good friend who's listening right now in New York City who is a musicologist, and he will be delighted to know that a musicologist will be called in to testify on behalf of these rock clubs that rock and hip-hop and DJ music are indeed fine art, and therefore the club should not have to
pay
this
tax. What is the argument from the county? The argument is that these are money-making entities, that they shouldn't be involved in what is considered the fine art tax exemption?
Well, the argument from the county starts with the fact that the county is broke and looking for any possible way to get an extra dime at this point, and I don't blame them. But secondly, yes, that rock and hip-hop and DJ music are somehow in a pop music category as opposed to, symphony orchestras and jazz
operas,
quartets,
right,
operas.
Right.
And I think the assumption is that if it has the word pop attached, it is therefore popular and therefore highly profitable for all involved. And anyone who's done time in the trenches of the music industry knows that if you're playing these small clubs, which is what we're talking about, clubs under 750 capacity, you are far from generating a king's ransom with your song and dance routine.
Let's take it back. I'll play in this argument because I'm actually intrigued by how this plays out, but I'll play the county's side for this.
Great.
At some point or another, it became that this tax exemption under whoever it was doing, it was a fine art tax exemption. At one point or another, they opened it up or allowed, I should say, someone probably allowed a rock club to get in. And now you're seeing so many different, because of precedent, rock clubs and rap houses, please, people like that are just doing it to get the tax exemption, not because they fit the mold, and the mold being that this is an art form that's for enriching the public in the space that we live. They're doing it to save money because they are trying to be profitable.
I'd say any club that takes advantage of it is doing it to save money and to be more profitable. Now, I'm not a lawyer, although I play one on WGN radio tonight.
Dun, 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 dun. Abraham Levitan, lawyer, tonight.
I do want to say that precedent is a big part of the law.
Right.
And
right.
It eventually turns into the law. That's why literally now means figuratively. Same thing with definitions. And you have a sense now where if rock clubs have been doing this for so long, they've been budgeting, planning on continuing their current tax status. I mean, it's brutal. It's a brutal business. And the idea of throwing a major curveball, I mean, it's bad enough that they're trying to collect going forward. But when I read this article again saw they're trying to get 6 years of back taxes, I mean, as you say, it could be a death sentence for a lot of small clubs in Chicago.
I want to hear what you think. 312-981-7200. If you're out there and you have an argument one way or the other, and you can articulate it and help us understand, because I guess I get the point. The fine art circus that's going on there about what is fine art and what it's not seems to be just ludicrous. But the idea that somewhere along the line they want to change tax exemption, that's their right as the county. I mean, they can make a choice, and they could be making that choice to say clubs like, I don't know, the Empty Bottle, clubs like, Talia Hall, or clubs like Lincoln Hall even, fit into this category. And you know what? You make young people coming in there. You're a business. You chose this business. You shouldn't get a freebie or a tax exemption from the county.
Yeah. Now let's broaden this argument out, though, because let's say you're the county and your goal is to make money off of Chicago music. Okay. So instead of punishing the people who are currently practicing this art form, I would even say a fine art form, of playing music and giving musicians places to play, why not do what Nashville does and what Austin, Texas does and make money off of the history and the legacy of your city?
Talking about like a Motor Row, a blues museum, that kind of thing. Like the idea of making a district that tourism is going to come to and tax the junk out of that.
Yes. Good job. No 7 second delay on that one. You know, that's the great irony, right, is that there's so much unmonetized space in the history of Chicago music that could be monetized, and yet you're going after pennies from these current practitioners of music making and providing.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back, and I'd love to get into the discussion about fine art, because that's where they're going, and I love that the county is going there with them. Like the lawyers, it almost feels like it's a, you know, they're just having fun with it, and the county's like, sure, you know what, let's do it. Let's figure out what fine art is.
I'm so glad that there's a musicologist to help us sort this out.
I love that a musicologist, I hope the musicologist is getting paid. We're not sure. Abraham Levitan in studio. Well, we're doing Nerds on Tour here. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Abraham Levitan. He's the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that you can find on iTunes. It's all the classics. So many classics right now.
Catch up. It's summer.
It's summer. And also Piano Power, which you're teaching children the songs they want to play on piano. I love that concept.
Yes.
When you're fully staffed.
Fully staffed. We are now accepting new students for the school year in the city or the northern suburbs. AC/DC, whatever you want to do, we come to your home.
Ooh,
that
really
is the other interesting point to make. We all do so much driving. How about taking one thing out of the equation?
My son was, I think he got interested in piano for Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, let's work that one out.
Okay. Yeah. And how long has he been playing now without playing Bad Romance?
He did one session that was what, like maybe a month and a half or whatever, you know, through the summer, Mondays and Wednesdays.
I guarantee you that if he had been with Piano Power by the end of that one session, he would have been able to play La La Ooh La La.
And he also had full makeup on.
For sure.
He'd have it all figured out. All right, we're talking about what is fine art? And the Cook County, the move, there was just a great article in The Reader about this. And it's really this amazing move by the county to really go after some clubs in Chicago that are using tax-exempt status, essentially a performance tax-exempt status for fine art, saying that rock clubs, DJs, house music, rap music, is not fine art, therefore they should not get the exemption. We don't know if this is going to stick, but it's become sort of a fun kangaroo court of now they're determining what is fine art.
Yes.
I love it.
And I guess the question is, how many people consider this a humorous argument that should play out as long as possible versus actually trying to solve a problem?
Yeah, I don't think we'll find out. Dan, you want to join the conversation? Dan, what do you think of this issue?
Well, I just wanted to add a different type of an angle to this. I just saw a blurb about it in the Trib, and I'm looking forward to reading it about it in the Reader. However, this is basically how the county operates. My father built an addition to his home a number of years ago. He put in all the permits. He did everything on the up and up with the town and the county of Cook County. And the county came back and said, you owe approximately 10 years of back taxes and penalties on an increase in real estate taxes for which you did not pay. So they have people that just try to figure out how they can get back taxes on things that weren't or were not done properly.
It's a revenue generator.
It's a revenue generator. And I hate to just use this and just, but I wanted to add that comment that, you know, it does show how desperate the county and the city is for money.
Mm-hmm.
However, I believe that, yes, I'm with you that notwithstanding the argument of what fine art is, it would be devastating. It was devastating to my father to be able to come up with this money, and it's even more devastating to a business, like you said, that is running on thin margins, where my father still wanted to live there, and so he had to pay. Businesses that can't afford these back taxes will unfortunately have to make some very hard decisions, and probably many of them close, which ultimately will just stifle fine art. So they may win the argument and get the money if that's the way it's going to go, but it's just kind of sad to see.
Dan. Thanks for the story. That's a good point. I mean, and I think more people are going to realistically be on the side of, okay, you're just trying to use this as revenue generator. But what I love about this is it's a two multifaceted case. And we've talked about, and I think a lot of people will side on, all right, you can't really go after back taxes. You're going to break down a business who was getting tax exempt status. You can't go back. That sounds like a scam. But what is fine art? And that, I love that the Cook County, like, they've almost walked into something that it's almost like, you know, this is quicksand. I want out. They don't want to be, like, no government wants to be in the business of identifying what is and what's not art.
It has kind of a Soviet bloc quality to it.
It really does.
In my opinion. Orwellian, even. So it is kind of exciting in that sense. And it's also completely ridiculous. I mean, one of the quotes from the Reader story was saying this takes us back to the 50s and, you know, watching Elvis's hips and trying to decide if this was a moral threat to the nation.
It really is. And it's funny because, okay, I guess the concept of, like, if I were going to call something fine art, right? I guess in my mind I would think of that as, like, woodwind instruments, right?
Okay.
I'm going there. So I would go to the idea of fine art being almost a nod to history in a way that you're performing an art form that has gone through human history that does not necessarily make money. The goal is not to be a rock star if you're in an opera or an orchestra, but your goal is to enrich the society in which you live.
Mm.
That is my definition of fine art. Yours.
So I'm going to bring up a counterexample that may or may not ring true to you, but because I have no life, I end up watching a lot of PBS, like on the weekends, mm-hmm. like Friday and Saturdays when they're doing pledge drives. I don't know if you've ever seen any of this programming.
I have seen it.
Is like symphony orchestras, like playing rock music with opera singers, like belting out the Steve Perry parts
and all that stuff. It's a weird fusion stuff, right.
It's out of control, and I find it so ridiculous and kind of in a way like very innocent and heartwarming. But you put an ensemble like that into this discussion.
Right.
Now, those are people that were trained to be fine artists, but have made some kind of weird left turn into a very profitable concert career.
It's almost like what you see when a cappella groups get out of the sort of college scene and they become famous and they tour and they make money. And you're like, well, that's fine art, but they're making money.
Yes. And speaking,
is that really what the difference is? Like, is fine art, is money have to be brought up in this equation?
I mean,
I don't know.
I think that's the subtext. I think, you know, there are government bureaucrats, again, that assume that by dubbing yourself a rock band, you are earning a life of outrageous riches and bubble baths 24/7. And who knows what goes on in the bubble baths. But that being said, the reality of that is so different. And you compare these like Bafo symphony rock groups, whatever they are, who play on PBS versus an experimental act trying to make the most of a 9 o'clock night at the Empty Bottle. Which one is pushing more boundaries? I would say it's the experimental act.
That's interesting. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, what do you want to add to the conversation tonight?
Well, as I told your producer, Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, all of them, their music was pop music.
Yeah, you're right.
There were people who were appalled by what people put on the stage back then and raised all kinds of emotions about it the way people do now. And now they're classics.
Yeah, that's true. Thanks
for
that.
They're the finest of fine art.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Kathy. That is a great point. I don't know how the county got involved, though. It's really smart by the lawyers on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, you could make an argument in the present time with a Chopin, with a Bach, with a Beethoven, that the powers that be would be like, no, this is not fine art. These are rappers. These are the rappers of the time.
For sure.
And we're going to look in 100 years and be like, Kanye West is a fine artist.
Yes. And that is the ultimate joke of all of this. And thanks, Kathy. That was an awesome point. I mean, anybody who's watched the movie Amadeus in recent memory sees how Mozart was completely a rock star of his day. Mm-hmm. And I have this vision, this fantasy of waking up Mozart or Beethoven and bringing them into 2016 and how long it would take them to get up to speed with Skrillex and with hip hop and everything.
Bill and Ted's. I think they did that.
I probably am ripping this off from Bill and Ted 3 or something like that. but
wow, it's Beethoven, man.
Beethoven's wearing shades. but the point being, I really don't think it would take them that long to become innovators in our current musical landscape and therefore yank themselves, as Kathy pointed out of the fine art category. Mm-hmm. And into this rock pop DJ category, in which case Cook County would have an issue with their artistry from that point on.
Abraham Levitan in studio. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. Let's keep talking. We got other issues to talk about. Pandora and Questlove. Also, Frank Ocean's very intriguing move to get out of his contract. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. But I feel like we can keep on this, and I know that people want to talk about it. 312-981-7200. Because I would also make the argument, doesn't the county have the right to change what a tax exemption is offered to? So if they want to say in the government statute, and they have people that will say aye, nay, aye, whatever it is, that it's opera, that it's unmiked, you know, that it's not for profits. Maybe there's something there that could play, and it's just the way the government.
Of course, they have the right, but the right of the citizenry is to make them look as ridiculous as possible for making that choice.
All right, stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. That's interesting, a little Kanye West there. Abraham Levitan's my guest tonight. We're Nerds on Tour, our monthly look at the music industry. Nerds on Tour, of course, also a podcast that Abraham does. You find it on iTunes. You know, I was just looking. There was an article I read last week that said that Kanye West has surpassed Michael Jackson in the number of top 10 Billboard hits, singles. Like in his career, it's like 42 or something like that. Now, obviously, you're comparing different generations, and Michael Jackson put a record out every 3 years. Kanye West and the new generation, they put every 6 hours. But the point being that it is interesting that for all of the people he you know, sort of polarizes, you know, he has become really the artist of our time.
Yeah. So the one counter argument to make there, and I'm making this as a huge Kanye fan, I will go to the mat for Kanye, is how many copies you needed to sell back then in the Michael Jackson era to make the top 10 versus now. I mean, I think it's minuscule now. I mean, there was this Paul McCartney article in Rolling Stone, this interview with him recently where he was talking about how, you know, somebody told him that a recent album of his was in the top 10 or something like that. And then he was like, oh, cool. What are the sales figures? And it was like,
a percentage of what the
tiny amount. And he was still being told to celebrate this amazing achievement of being in the top 10.
Oh, that's it. I didn't even think about that. That's interesting. Yeah. The industry has changed so much that you're not selling, but there's so much of it that, yeah, you can have a minuscule number and it make it to the top 10.
Right.
There you go. And you know what? Kanye's out. He's out. Never mind. That argument's dead.
Worthless.
That's it. All right. Back to the fine art conversation. 312-981-7200. You know, the one thing Dan brought up in the call was just this concept that maybe the county, this is what the county does to generate revenue at a certain time in the year where they kind of have a little back tax frenzy on all sorts of places. And maybe because the Reader covers arts and culture and the lawyers on the other side for Bruce Finkelman and others, you know, are able to get the media's attention, that's why we're talking about this. But this may be a practice that happens more often than not. But it's interesting because, okay, let's say that they do succeed and these clubs up with 750 seats have to pay the tax. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to go under, but it does mean.
So I was talking to my wife this evening over a delicious lentil dish that she had made about what ultimately happens if the clubs lose and then they have to pay this 3% tax. And her point was that they would just raise their prices by 3%. And therefore, it's the consumer that is ultimately paying this tax,
so
not the club.
Your wife makes an unbelievable point that it's almost like the county, they'll get their money, and they would much rather have the empty bottle raise their prices than for them to raise a tax.
Yes.
That's politically, you know, not possible. But, you know, if you said, oh, now the ticket at empty bottle is 20 instead of 15, we'd all be like, oh, man, the man. Okay, here you go. Take it off my card. But, you know, it would be passed on to us regardless.
Yeah, I mean, didn't the Cubs just go through this thing with amusement taxes and all this stuff? And, oh, sorry, everybody, we have to raise our prices. Now, I mean, the Cubs are putting out a product that people would frankly pay, you know, hundreds of dollars for, at least in its current form. Whereas, you know, a Monday night at the Empty Bottle, well, those shows are usually free, but a weeknight at the Empty Bottle, there's a legitimate difference in people who would come in for $7 and people who would come in for $10. So, I mean, you know, in cases like that, it could be the difference between selling out a show and not selling out a show.
In your gut, as someone who has followed the music industry, do you feel that they have a point, that the artists and the club owners that are defending their tax-exempt status, do you think they have a chance to win this case, to go there philosophically with fine art and avoid the idea of paying tax?
Yeah, I absolutely feel like they have a point. I mean, fine art versus popular art is such a gauzy description to begin with that it's just not worth picking up that fight. I mean, we were talking off air about, you know, perhaps this is an argument that the county thought they could just throw in with their other little mom and pop money grabs, as the first caller was indicating, and this bubbled up into the popular consciousness in a way that they were hoping it didn't. But this is not the kind of argument that government should be legislating at all. And, you know, one of the people that was texting that you read to me was saying that even high schools don't do this kind of thing.
224 says any high school or college includes any kind of music in its fine arts department.
Any kind. And that's what the county needs to get on board with, too. I mean, this is such, you know, it is the definition of a slippery slope.
It really is. And I, you know, it's one of these classic arguments, and I feel very strongly that fine art should include it all. But I also will say, playing devil's advocate, that a house that's you know, if the county is seeing someone who's charging $20-$25 at a cover, and the place is packed, and there's a DJ, and the club promoters are getting paid, and the club's getting paid, and then when it comes tax time, they're like, hey, or fine art, you know, we're not going to give you that 3% like everybody else. That's unfair.
Sure.
There's a fairness issue that says, hey, listen, so maybe there's a little bit of both where they're trying to go after those type of people, and who's caught in the crossfire are the people, like you said, Monday night where it's experimental free night. And, you know, that is fine art because they're enriching the community that's around them. And they're the ones that aren't going to be able to provide that if they have to pay that cat.
Yeah. And I just got to shake my head and say, it's the system, baby. This is Chicago. You learn the rules, you learn how to get around the rules, and you play the game. Now, at some point, somebody blows the whistle and says, oh, the rules are changing. And then it's your job to scream as loudly as possible and say, don't change the rules in my game. And so that's what's going on. I mean, you know, we could make this all about principle, but the reality is you start your business under the auspices of a certain set of rules and expectations. And if those rules and expectations change, you lawyer up and you make your case.
Well, I don't know enough about, I mean, obviously there's, I know that the state of Illinois, and this happens in theater all the time. The state of Illinois will give you a 501c3 not-for-profit status to be a theater company. Hmm. You know, you have a mission statement, you sort of organize yourself to be a not-for-profit. And a lot of the theaters, it's pretty amazing, and you see this a lot, the Goodman Theater is a not-for-profit 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Jones was in here within the last year saying, you know, the War Paint Broadway musical, which is coming through, which just ended, or is maybe just wrapping up, was a huge success. And also in the history of Chicago, the most expensive not-for-profit theater ticket in the history of Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, so you get this idea that you're like, okay, well, you know, the state lets you be a 501c3, which says you can raise money. Abraham, you can give money to the theater. And it also gives you a tax-exempt status that you don't have to pay the tax. But how do you balance that when you're also charging Broadway prices at $225 a ticket?
Right.
And saying, well, that's what the going rate is.
How do you do that?
So that's the same argument with the music clubs.
Right. So now you're talking about a venue-by-venue distinction when in reality, maybe the only way to make sense of it is to do a show-by-show distinction or a play-by-play distinction. I mean, you know, that's how ridiculous it gets.
It does.
You get the empty bottle, like, waving their flag saying, oh, it's Monday night, this is tax exempt,
right?
And then oh, it's Friday night, it's not tax exempt. Oh wait, but the show didn't do very well. It only drew 75 people, even though it was a Friday night. So you know what? It's tax exempt again.
Man, it's a rabbit hole because it is. I mean, when art gets to a point where it's competitive, you know, and they're selling, you know, when Steppenwolf is selling a ticket against the Goodman, and they're both, you know, selling the hot show that they have at $185, $200 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they're not paying any tax to the city or to the county, and they're also able to raise money through, you know, you just giving them money. I mean, at a certain point, you're like, I thought the concept at the beginning of the day, and I'm not just singling out them because that happens all over the place, is that, you know, it's a not-for-profit so they don't have to play that game. They don't have to, you know, we're going to give you the tax exemption so we can take a little bit off the top so you can give affordable experiences to the masses that are part of your community.
But I just got to
take advantage of it.
I got to go widescreen here for a second and say that if this was Europe, this conversation would be so ridiculous. That this
There's a lot of things on our
art.
Show that would be ridiculous.
This is art. It has nothing to do with the government putting their hands in. Well, okay. Now that I'm saying that, in Europe, the government would be doing more than trying to take money out. They would actually be funding the HECK out of all of these projects. Can I say heck on AM radio?
That's good.
And they would actually be partners with the creators instead of opposition to the creators. I mean, you know, the whole adversarial nature of how the government is perceived in Chicago in the arts community is insane. And I mean, it goes back to this idea of, like, if you really want to get money from the arts community, why don't you monetize the history of Chicago blues and jazz in a way that makes some kind of sense for tourism and ongoing revenue instead of trying to penny pinch the people that are making very small incomes right now?
Abraham Levitan in studio. Nerds on Tour is his podcast. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And then let's talk Frank Ocean.
Let's do it.
I think that's the old days of the record deals, the multi-record deals, the multi-album deals, and Frank Ocean may have found a workaround. We'll talk about his big month here with Abraham.
He got out of his.
Coming up, stay with us. Abraham Levitan in studio. It's The Download, 720 WGN, Abraham's podcast, Nerds on Tour. He found on iTunes, a podcast, interview podcast that covers the music industry. He's also our guest once a month here on The Download. One thing, Frank Ocean, great, I guess you'd call him an R&B singer at this point, right?
I'd call him a fine artist.
A fine, fine artist. Frank Ocean, he came out, I think it was what, last week? He came out with an album, and it was a big deal. Frank Ocean's dropping new music. This is a big deal. And then quietly, within days, he drops another one.
Yes.
He drops two. Why did Frank Ocean drop two albums in the span of 4 days?
I mean, at first, everyone just thought, this guy is so prolific, he can't be stopped. But then they started reading the credits at the bottom of these two releases and noticed that the first one said Def Jam Records, and the second one did not. It was credited to Frank Ocean's own label. So you read a little deeper into the story, and it turns out that Frank Ocean had one album left on his Def Jam contract, wisely used that final bullet to put out a big visual album, Beyonce style, and draw a lot of attention. And then within days, while he still had all this attention on him, say,
really?
Oh, here is the first release on my own.
So, okay, so let me ask you about that, because, see, he got out of his Def Jam. He did his last album on Def Jam. So now he's ready to go on his own album, and he's able to use that buzz from Def Jam. Are artists usually prolific like that, where they're able to produce that kind of music that quick? I mean, he's got, what, 9 songs and 18 songs at the go, ready to go? Or is there something that will suffer from the quality?
I mean, I have to go back in my mind to when his last full-length Channel Orange came out, but I think it's been at least 3 years, something like that.
So he's been stockpiling.
I think he's been stockpiling, yes.
Now, is there an issue, if I were Def Jam, do you run the risk, do you have to like kind of go in there and be like, where'd you record tracks? Where's that bass? Where the bass player? Who paid that bass player? Like, I mean, is it that kind of thing where you're like, one is Def Jam, and then 4 days later, Zone. I mean, does he have to be pretty smart about making sure they're recorded and done completely separate?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm sure it's in the language of the contract somewhere as to whether Def Jam has control over the full content of every recording session or just control over the media, the actual MP3s that end up on the final release. But it does call to mind a very rich history of what rock and roll artists have done to get out of their contracts over the years.
Why do they? Because it used to be that you made it if you got a 6-album deal from Epic Records, right? You were, oh my God, you made it. Take us through that.
Yeah. So what used to happen is that when artists were desperate to get out of their record contract, one famous example being Van Morrison, who had a certain number of songs left on his old 60s record contract and literally churned out songs of just him strumming an acoustic guitar and mumbling nonsense. One of the songs is called Ringworm, where he just mumbles for 30 seconds about having ringworm on his toes. He would do song after song, and then he would say, okay, I've fulfilled the terms of my contract, and now I'm moving on. Now, the difference in the 60s is that when you moved on, you ran straight into the arms of another record label that was going to treat you better. And now, when artists are desperate to get out of their major label contract, they run the heck out of the music industry entirely.
Yeah, and there has been, I mean, a Pearl Jam was outspoken about, they had a 7-album deal, I think it was with Epic, whoever they were on when they signed. I mean, and they were very outspoken about happy to be out of that contract. They finally did their last one this a couple of years ago. And it really is because, you know, not unlike sports and other, the pastures are ripe in the way that musicians don't want to be in record deals anymore because they realize they can make much more money without a middleman.
Yeah, and of course the biggest thing that's changed is distribution. Now that we are in the age of the web, as I like to call it, distribution has been completely solved. You can do it on your own. So all you really need labels for, in a sense, at least these big labels, is to be enormous hype machines. And once you get to a certain level of hype, why do you need the hype machine anymore if you're a Radiohead or something like that? So, I mean, Frank Ocean, you just see it starting to happen earlier and earlier into artists' careers. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if Frank Ocean were following the Radiohead model, he would be on a major label for another 5 or 6 albums before he pulled a stunt like this. But I think
you can change it up.
This does set a precedent for doing it earlier.
Another big part, and maybe it's not as big anymore, but I think about radio play. This concept that the radio stations, especially Clear Channel and the FM stations, they almost were the mouthpieces or were in partnership with major record labels. Do they have any power anymore? I mean, is it like the Ariana Grandes and the Katy Perrys that they play on Kiss FM? I mean, that's because they're signed to a major label. You're not hearing radio stations play too much that's the independent variety.
Certainly not Clear Channel stations, right. I think
is that
it has
change?
I don't know. I think maybe the question to ask is, are the stakes so small now that it doesn't really matter? I mean, it goes back to the idea of Kanye having, 42 top 10 singles, and maybe each of those top 10 singles sold a 10% of what Michael Jackson's top 10 singles sold. I mean, with Frank Ocean, I think part of him is probably saying, okay, so I don't get played on the radio and I sell 80% of what I would sell if I were on a major label, mm-hmm. Who cares? What that other 20% is such a small number now because all the numbers are getting so small that I might as well take 100% of that pie.
Right.
Instead of taking...
It's so interesting. It's interesting to me because it really is the... we keep talking about the death of the music industry, but until all artists are playing this way, they're in this weird kind of purgatory where it's 50-50, where you still have the Ariana Grandes and you still have the Britney Spears and the others who are playing the major industry role, and so they get fed into the Clear Channel stations. But then you have the Kanye Wests and the Chance the Rappers and others who aren't, but are making money.
And if you really want to take it back, let's go back to Ani DiFranco in the 90s. Because she got out of that game or was never in that game. And her argument was always in part a financial one. I mean, she was always saying, look, I'm selling a tiny fraction of what these popular artists are selling. But arguably, I'm making just as much money as they are because I keep 100% of it.
Absolutely. The idea being that agents and managers and marketing people are all taking your money. It's at the same time, Britney Spears is getting the same kind of money as Chance the Rapper at the end of the day.
Yes.
That's really interesting to think about. Abraham, great to have you here. Good hour.
Great to have you, Justin.
Abraham Levitan, you can check out his podcast, Nerds on Tour, on iTunes. Also,
Piano Power.
What's the website?
PianoPower.org.
Good job.
Let's sign up for back-to-school music lessons tonight.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you.